1. Good morning, Lillooet, and welcome to another day of live broadcasting here on CHLS 100.5 FM. My name is Jeff O'Kelly. This program is News Button, and I'll be with you until 9 o'clock. And we started with some music positively bristling with energy there. That was the first movement, Allegro Spiritoso, that comes from Symphony No. 49 in F Major by Christian Kannebich, a German composer. And that was a recording with the Nikolaus Esterhazy Sinfonia, conducted by Uwe Grod, whose name is great fun to say, and we will come back and hear them in a few minutes in the rest of that fairly short symphony. Right now, though, it's time for weather and road reports. Yesterday's low, 11.9. The high made it all the way up to 31.1. I think that's our warmest day yet so far this year. Environment Canada tells us as of 7 a.m. the temperature was 19 degrees. Today, mainly cloudy with a 60% chance of showers and the risk of thunderstorms this afternoon. Wind from the south at 40, gusting to 60, a high today of 22 degrees, the UV index at 5, which is moderate. Tonight, mainly cloudy, with a 40% chance of showers, risk of thunderstorms this evening. Wind from the south at 40, gusting to 60, a low tonight of 14 degrees. tomorrow, mainly cloudy, 30% chance of showers, wind from the south at 40, gusting to 60, a high tomorrow of 21. And then it looks like we will warm back up after that starting on Sunday. Sunday, a mixture of sun and cloud, a low of 12, a high of 25. Monday, sunny, a low of 14, a high of 28. And just in time for your holiday, July the 1st, sunny with a low of 14 and a high of 32. So it's kind of almost predictable. Around about July the 1st, Lillooet gets really hot. We'll see how long it lasts. I'm not sure. Taking a look at conditions across the country and around the province, let us start in Charlottetown, PEI, where it's 14 degrees and cloudy. Montreal, mainly sunny and 24, and Toronto, also 24 and mainly sunny. Iqaluit is mostly cloudy and plus 3. Winnipeg is 21 and cloudy. Saskatoon, partly cloudy and 17. Yellowknife, 17 degrees and partly cloudy. Edmonton, sunny and 17. Calgary, 12 degrees and mainly sunny. Whitehorse, mainly sunny and 6. Prince George is 12 degrees and cloudy, and a little closer to home, Clinton cloudy and 11, Hope 14 degrees and cloudy, Kamloops mostly cloudy and 17, 13 degrees in Pemberton, and in Vancouver a light rain shower at 14 degrees. And on the highways, not too much today. A number of things have been removed from the Drive BC site. I guess they're finished now. But rock scaling continues at the summit of Jackass Mountain, 17 kilometers west of Lytton, 7:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. daily, and that runs through July the 7th. Probably not running on July the 1st is my guess. The road is reduced to single-lane alternating traffic there with up to 20-minute delays. And also on Highway 1, paving continues between Cache Creek and Kamloops, a total of 27 kilometers, but a whole bunch of little segments. I think they're only working on one or two at a time. That works 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday, and it looks like actually Monday should be the last day of that single-lane alternating traffic there as well. Then we move to Highway 40, where it's construction from 12 to 16 kilometers west of Lillooet on Highway 40, 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Saturday. Again, probably not running on the stat. The road will be reduced to single-lane alternating traffic there. And Highway 99 south, construction from 14 to 28 kilometers south of Lillooet, 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Saturday. That continues through September the 15th. Single lane alternating traffic there. And that's it for the highways. I did check on the ferry schedules. Both Big Bar and Lytton ferries are open. The Lytton ferry still to light traffic and Stein Valley school buses only. But that will at some point in the near future probably be open to the usual traffic. And do I have anything else? Nope, I guess that's it. So let us go back to the music of Christian Kannebich, born in 1731, died in 1798. And I can't remember now if it was Munich or Mannheim that he spent a lot of his adult life working in. He became the, I think, Kapellmeister is the correct term. Essentially the manager of all the musical activities at the court of Mannheim or Munich, which would have been a principate. And these were Germany was not a country yet. It was consisted of lots of little states, some of which were run by nobility, some of which were under the control of the church. And actually in the 1770s, I believe, Mozart spent some time in whichever of those two cities. I get them mixed up because of both starting with M. He spent some time in one of those cities. I think his father was along, and Mozart got to know Kannebich, although Kannebich was, 20 or more years older. And Mozart actually seems to have had a little bit of a crush on Kannebich's daughter, Rosa, I believe. And he wrote a piano sonata that, I don't know if it was dedicated to her, but it's said to have been inspired by her. Now, Christian Kannebich is not really considered to be one of the great voices of the classical period. Really, there are two great voices of the classical period, Haydn and Mozart. But there were lots of other figures like Kannebich, and we've heard Franz Ignaz Beck, and Joseph Martin Kraus and a few others that I've played here on Snooze Button. These were all very, very competent composers. The only thing that kind of kept them from moving into the Mozart Haydn level was they just weren't quite as inspired in terms of their thematic material, and sometimes not quite as adventurous in their sense of texture. But the music is always very attractive. So we've got two more movements here, the second movement Andante and the third movement Presto ma non troppo, which is a little bit contradictory. Presto means really fast. Ma non troppo means but not too much. So make of it what you will. Anyway, here are the two remaining movements of Symphony No. 49 in F major by Cannabich, not to be confused with anything else that starts out with the letters C-A-N-N-A-B. Actually, C-A-N-N-A-B-I, it goes on. This is a recording with the Nikolaus Esterhazy Sinfonia and the conductor Uwe Grod.
Thank you.
Was music of Christian Kannebich. We heard his symphony number 49 in F major, and that was a recording featuring the Nikolaus Esterhazy Sinfonia conducted by Uwe Grod. I think I've explained before, the Nikolaus Esterhazy was a very prominent and important patron of Joseph Haydn in the 18th century. So fair enough that a chamber orchestra should be named after him. I believe they are based in Hungary. And they're a really, really good group. They seem to specialize primarily in music from the 18th century. But there's always something very bright and alert about their playing that I enjoy a great deal. Okay, it's 8:22. Let me tell you what's coming up today on Radio Lillooet, so I better switch to the schedule. There we go. When Snooze Button wraps up, I'll be leaving you with music from the Folk World Reggae list. Later today, Democracy Now, 3 until 4 p.m. This evening is the Six Mix Classic Rock with your host Lyle from 6 until 8. And then, I believe, if my memory is serving me correctly, Pleasure Beat with host Wendy Larman will not be on this evening at 8 p.m. Also, don't forget, on Sundays, you can hear classical music from about 5:30 in the morning, assuming I remember to put it on, about 5:30 until 9 a.m. I'm not here in the studio. It's just the computer playing music, so you don't have to listen to me talking about it. At 9 a.m., the Andrew Twisty Family Hour. Later in the day, Fusion Cafe with your host Jason McLeod at noon. And I guess I better update you on the Nelson Osprey webcam if you have been listening to me talk about that. I might as well carry on and keep giving you the info. So the male Osprey, as I mentioned, he disappeared, I guess it was a week ago yesterday was the last time he was seen, and it wasn't nobody was certain what had happened to him. Corpse of a, unfortunately, of a dead osprey, with a fish still in its talons, was found in a ravine near where the osprey nest is, and it is believed that that is the male from the nest, and that he met his death by electrocution when their wings cross a couple of, if their wings make contact with two different wires and they're the wrong wires, can be very, very, well, they can kill them, obviously. So the female osprey is left now with only two chicks that she has to try and rear. It's still going to be challenging for her because her instinct at this point is primarily to sit on the nest and guard the chicks. She obviously needs to get food for herself, and she does go fishing a little bit apparently, but most of the time she's spending on the nest. Now, the Nelson Hydro, Kootenai Hydro, or maybe it is Nelson Hydro, I'm not sure. They have received permission. I'm just going to check there so I can give the correct information as to who it is. It is Nelson Hydro. And they have received permission from the Department of Fish and Wildlife to hoist fish up every other day via a pulley system on a platform that will, or on a tray, that will come up fairly close to the level of the nest so the female can see this fish and take it. Apparently it's not that common for ospreys to take fish in that way. They're so hardwired for, you know, fishing, hunting the way they usually do. But it seems as if this has had some success so far. The chicks are probably not getting as many feedings as they would if they're, well, almost certainly not getting as many feedings as they would if there were two parents. If they, excuse me, if they can make it through the next week and a half or so, they will be old enough that her instincts will change and she will recognize that she can leave them for longer periods of time to go fishing. So it's kind of a waiting game to see what happens at this point. Anyway, columbiawireless.ca is the address to go to if you want to see what's going on there. Really kind of an amazing bit of nature going on. It may not be always pretty or fun when bad things like this happen, but there's a real experiment going on here in terms of human-osprey relations, and it's going to be interesting to see if she can successfully rear even one of these two chicks, hopefully one and both, and hopefully it does not take too great a toll on her. Okay, that's it for birding stuff. Let's go to music by Gershwin now, and I may have played this piece twice already this year, but I'm going to play it again because I like it, and I think it's great fun. We're going to listen to the Cuban Overture by Gershwin. This is music he wrote, I think, in the early 1930s, and he had recently been on a little holiday to Cuba. Came back with some Cuban percussion instruments and wanted to write a piece to kind of celebrate his recent trip, and decided to incorporate some of those percussion instruments into the piece. The version we're going to hear is not the orchestral version, but an arrangement that Gershwin made for one piano, four hands of the piece. And we're going to listen to a recording with the Canadian piano brothers, Jamie and John Kimura Parker. Both of them have featured fairly often here and now and then on Snooze Button. And I am particularly delighted by this recording because I had a very slight influence on the way it came out. This was recorded at the Orcas Island Chamber Music Festival, the Orcas Island just off the Washington coast, in summer of 2013, just last year. And I write the program notes for the Orcas Island Festival. Actually, my memory may be serving me correctly. It was 2012 when they did this. Anyway, as I said, I write the program notes, and one of the notes I had to write was for the Cuban Overture. And I mentioned that in the course of the note that it was unfortunate in the piano four-hand version, good though it was, to lose out on the percussion instruments. So Jackie Parker, whose wife Aloysia is the administrator of the festival, he decided to see what they could do to spice it up and incorporate some percussion. They didn't get percussionists in. They just dealt with it themselves. And this really quite amazes me. At the dress rehearsal, which would be the last rehearsal you have before a performance, That was the first time they tried it with percussion, and all they brought in was congas. And so what happened was, in a couple of spots in the piece, Jackie would play his entire piano part with one hand, sometimes incorporating two-handed music into one hand, and with the other hand he was playing the congas. And then Jamie, in some of the quieter parts of the piece, Jamie incorporates some knuckle knocking, if I may put it that way, on the body of the piano, as I think it's an imitation. I can't remember what specific instrument Gershwin uses, but it is one of his Cuban percussion instruments. Now, there's no way that they could completely recreate all of the percussion that, or even suggest all of the percussion that is used in the piece, but they were still able to get the feel of it right. And I've known John Kimura Parker, also known as Jackie Parker. I've known him for well over 30 years now. And I've always known that he was a really great musician and a really great pianist. But when I hear this and I consider that all he really did probably was listen to a recording of the orchestral part a few times, the orchestral version a few times, and from that figured out what he could play with one hand on the congas while playing on the piano with the other hand. He did all of this essentially in his head and then came up with this at the dress rehearsal, which just worked absolutely brilliantly. Anyway, when I think about that, I kind of say to myself, no matter how well I know Jackie and no matter how good a musician I think he is, he's probably always a better musician than I think. And that none of that is to denigrate the playing of his brother Jamie, who is an equally fine musician. Jamie is a member of the well-known Canada's Griffin Piano Trio, who are renowned all over the world as one of the best piano trios around in existence today. So both of them incredibly fine musicians. Anyway, I've talked enough about it. Here is the Cuban Overture by Gershwin for piano four hands with congas and knuckles. Thank you. That was the sound. It's the sound of my chair squeaking. See, I can do it again and again and again. All right, some very well-deserved applause there for Canadian pianist brothers Jamie and Jackie Parker. They were playing the Cuban Overture, music by George Gershwin, and that was Gershwin's arrangement of the piece for piano four hands, sometimes played with piano three hands, while other hands were playing percussion instruments. Then it was Jackie and Jamie playing the percussion themselves. Really quite stunning. I just love that recording. Okay, it's 8:40, and I better bring you some public service announcements. Today, of course, is Farmers Market Day, 8:30 to 1:30 across from the post office. If you're a visitor to Lillooet, that's a great place to go on a Friday morning. Bring a little bit of cash, especially you might be tempted by some of the baking there. But there's all sorts of other things there. Local quilt makers, produce, plants, preserves, all sorts of great stuff. Once again, that's across from the post office on Main Street. And the BC Screening Mammography Mobile Unit will be at the local Lillooet Health Unit Saturday, June the 28th, and also on this coming Monday, June the 30th. If you would like an appointment for a mammogram, the special number to call is 1-800-663-9203. No doctor's referral is needed, but you do need to make sure you have your BC Care card available when you are making your booking for an appointment. So once again, the number 1-800-663-9203, and there's also a website you can go to for more information, www.smpbc.ca. A reminder that Tuesday will be Canada Day celebrations in the park, Downton Park, next to the museum. Lots of great things, family activities, live music, food, face painting for the kids, or I guess adults if you want it, and all of that getting underway at 11 a.m., I guess, until everybody decides they've had enough. Admission is free, and this is sponsored by the District of Lillooet, Bridge River Lillooet News, and By Low Foods. And finally, an update on a program running here at the Rec Center. I just need to stretch across for a piece of paper here. These are regarding the summer hikes. So the first of the summer hikes was supposed to have taken place earlier this week. That was going to be a day hike to Peanut Lake. But due to weather, it was rescheduled to Thursday of next week. That's July the 3rd. Peanut Lake up above the Fountain Valley. And as I say, that one's a day hike. And let's see, do I have anything else to tell you about that one? No. But then the next one scheduled is July the 12th and 13th, Saturday and Sunday. I've been saying just July 12th. But that's been changed from a day hike to an overnight hike now. That will be a trip to Blowdown Lake. There are, I believe, still positions available in the group of hikers for that. You, of course, need to have suitable boots and proper clothing, and you need to pack a lunch for both days. You'll need a backpack, sleeping bag, and a sleeping pad. And if you have your own tent, great. The cost is $40 to go on that one. That includes supper and breakfast. So again, you only have to deal with your own lunches. And also there will be various topics of instruction that the guide, Wayne Robinson, will be teaching people about who want and kind of an introduction to backpacking. So he'll be teaching about navigation using a maps, compass, GPS, that sort of thing, campsite selection, camp setup, water purification, how to store your food safely to avoid bear problems, washroom considerations, camp stoves, how to use them, that sort of thing, and camp safety. And so that is all coming up, as I say, July the 12th and 13th. And if you would like more information about that, you can contact the Rec Center 256-7527 or email them rec@lillooetbc.ca. And that's all I've got for weather and roads, or sorry, for public service announcements. Tomorrow actually, will be the 100th anniversary of the day when Archduke Franz Ferdinand and his wife Sophie were assassinated in Sarajevo. Now, that event did not specifically cause World War One. There were many, many underlying problems at the time in Europe that sort of needed to sort themselves out. They chose a pretty bad way of sorting themselves out. But that event, the assassination, is generally believed to have been kind of the primary catalyst, the thing that really set it off, even though it likely would have come about at some point anyway, World War One. So I thought we should have a little bit of World War One music, or World War One inspired music, if one, to the extent that one can be inspired by a piece, by a war. We're going to listen to Le Tombeau de Couperin by Maurice Ravel. This is music he wrote during the war. He served as an ambulance driver during the war, and he wrote this music for solo piano. The Couperin in the title, of course, is the Baroque French composer François Couperin. Ravel had a great admiration for many of the earlier generations of French composers, and so he wanted to pay homage to him. But he also wanted to dedicate or have this work serve as a remembrance of friends of his who were killed in the war. So as I say, there he wrote it for solo piano. It originally had six movements, and each movement was dedicated to one of his friends who had been killed in World War One. I'm not going to give you their names because I don't have the score in front of me. I would need that, and none of them are people that they're not famous except for having had these pieces dedicated to them. Later on, Ravel orchestrated four of the six movements of the suite, and that's the version we're going to hear. He left out two movements, left out the fugue and the concluding toccata. I believe his what Ravel had in mind in leaving them out was that they just wouldn't, they were such, they're so integral to the piano and the way the piano works that they wouldn't really transfer that well to orchestra. So what we're left with are the Prelude, Rigaudon, the Minuet, and the Fortelan. And this is probably fairly familiar music to you. You may have heard it even if you don't know that's what it is. It's very notey. It's not quite as impressionistic as a lot of other Ravel's music, not surprising, given that he's paying homage in part to a Baroque composer. I think that's about all I really should say about it. Let's listen to this recording with the Montreal Symphony Orchestra. The conductor is Charles Dutoit.
Thank you.
That was music by Maurice Ravel. We heard Le Tombeau de Couperin, six movements he wrote for piano, and then he arranged these four movements as a little orchestral suite. That was the Montreal Symphony Orchestra with Charles Dutoit conducting, and something went wacko with our CD player while that was playing. I think we were in the second movement of it, and so I had to stop it, and the only way I could get it to play properly was to start the second movement all over again. So sorry about the technical difficulties there. Hopefully they will prove to be just a passing little thing. Every now and then the CD player, even from when it was quite new, every now and then it just has a little moment where it decides to go off and do its own thing. But for the most part, it behaves fairly well. It's 9:06. Now, I am going to bring you an encore. I was going to bring you two encores. What I was going to do was play the two movements from the piano original that Ravel left out, so you could hear them as well. But because of that technical problem and because of my time limitations this morning, I don't have time to bring you both of them, but I am going to play one of them for you. So we'll hear the concluding toccata. This is the last movement of the six-movement piano suite. And a toccata, if you don't know, is usually, at least by the time Ravel was writing his, toccatas had come to be thought of as real virtuoso showpieces, particularly for pianists. They very often feature fast repeated notes, and in fact Ravel's pretty much based his toccata on the notion of fast repeated notes. You'll hear lots of that going on. Another thing that makes this piece difficult is the way that he sort of tangles up the two hands in the middle of the keyboard. He gets one of them going over the top of the other, or vice versa, and increases the challenges greatly, quite apart from just keeping your fingers separate. One of the difficulties when one hand is crossing the others is that you can't see where the hand underneath, you can't see everything that the fingers are doing, so you have to know your keyboard geography really well. And we have a Canadian pianist here, Louis Lortie, who definitely knows his keyboard geography. In the late 1980s, he made a two-CD collection of the complete piano music of Maurice Ravel, complete solo piano music, I should say. And for nearly a decade, that two-CD set kind of held sway, is generally considered to be maybe not the very best, but in the top two or three recordings of Ravel's piano music. There have been such a proliferation of recordings of Ravel's music. There are other recordings now that people would add in, so it's no longer the top two or three, but the top five or six or eight or ten that you would have to count. But Louis Lortie still stands in there, and rightly so. These are just great, great performances. So here he is with the toccata from Le Tombeau de Couperin.